Here we go. Good morning or afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. At this time, we'd like to inform you that you are on a listen only until the question and answer session at the end of our conference call today. This call will be recorded. I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Mike Ryan. You may begin, sir.
Great. Thank you. Hello, I'm Mike Ryan, IBM Software Group Business Partner Enablement, and I'd like to welcome you to today's Processor Value Unit Sales Skills Training for IBM Business Partners. Now, for today's call, there are three presentations which you can link directly to from the July 27th Think Thursday Processor Value Unit Kickoff presentation. If you click on the Processor Value Unit Resources for IBM Business Partners hyperlink, and that was on slide 5, if I recall. If you don't have that presentation and you need the URL, it is, and I'll read this slowly so you can access it, it's www.ibm.com/software/services/cwecasp.nsf/wdocs/pvu_resources_for_ibm_business_partners. Sorry about that long-worded URL, but I'll read it one more time. www.ibm.com/software/swhyphen lotus/services/cwepassport.nsf/wdocs/pvu_resources_for_ibm_business_partners. Sorry about that long-worded URL. Again, if you have the presentation, you can easily access it from the hyperlink. Now, for today's call, we have two subject matter expert speakers, and they are Sue Swanson, manager of the Passport Advantage Program, and Carlos Belak, program manager, IBM Software Group Pricing Strategy. Now, we do have a full agenda today, so if you are following along, please open the Processor Value Unit Customer Experience presentation and turn to slide 2. Now, on today's call, we're going to go into greater details of the Processor Value Unit announcement, and we'll be covering the customer experience, quote tools, and sales scenarios. Now, following sales scenarios, we're going to open it up then for a question and answer. Now, I encourage you to ask your questions, as you have on this call the Processor Value Unit licensing experts. Turn to slide 3. This is a timeline review. On the 25th of July, IBM announced Processor Value Unit licensing for IBM Middleware. And on the 27th, we held a kickoff to communicate this to you, our IBM business partners. And we're following up with today's call, Sales Skills Training, to provide you with the sufficient skills to understand and license IBM software to your customers. Turning to slide 4, these are the sales resources hyperlinks available to IBM business partners, which I encourage you to visit and to review, to build your Processor Value Unit licensing sales skills. So that was a quick review of the timeline and the objectives. We go to slide 5. I'm now going to turn it over to Sue Swanson to take you through the customer experience. Sue, are you there?
Sue, check your mute button. One moment, sir. I'll check on Sue again.
All right.
Sue, your line is open. Sue, check your mute button. Your line is open.
Let me see if I can reach her as well. Carlos, if Sue is not able to join, are you able to present?
Yes, I am. I'm pinging with Sue. She's calling back, but...
I'm back.
Okay, great.
Sorry. I hit the wrong button on my phone.
That's all right. Okay, so I'm turning it over to you on slide 5.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Sorry. Very sorry. Thank you, Mike. As Mike said, this is Sue Swanson, and I manage the Passport Advantage program in Software Group headquarters. I'm going to take you through some of the overview of what happens to the customer experience and how the customer sees what is happening to themselves as we have announced processor value units. So go to page 6, which is the agenda on my the presentation that I'm giving. First, what I'm going to do is take you through a review of the processor value unit licensing announcement. Then I'll describe how Passport Advantage part numbers are affected. Thirdly, we will review the Passport Advantage online and the changes the customer will experience. And finally, we'll describe how maintenance renewal quotes will look in the future. If you please go to page 7, what I'm going to do is briefly review what we announced, because I know it may have been a while since you went through this. IBM is introducing the per-processor licensing replacement called Processor Value Unit Licensing. Processor Value Unit is a unit of measure used to differentiate licensing of middleware on processors, and over time will evolve to differentiate processor families based on relative performance. Initially, however, our focus is to convert to the new processor value units without disrupting our customers' current plans and budgets. Going forward, IBM middleware, which previously used the processor licensing unit, will now be licensing processor value units. We created 3 broad tiers or levels, and all existing processors have been assigned to one of those tiers. For each product, customers will need to acquire the appropriate number of processor value units for the level or tier of the specified processor on which the software is deployed. All of the processors within a processor family will be assigned to the same tier. Processor family is a group of processors within a given processor technology, which may vary in clock speed or cache size, but have the same or similar processor design and performance characteristics. We are not going to split families, and we're not going to have customers have to buy additional value unit licenses when they install minor technology upgrades to their existing hardware. If you please move to the next page, which is page 8. Just as a reminder, to convert existing per processor licenses to the new processor value unit licenses, we have used the conversion factor of 100. As an example, each core on a RISC dual-core-based system required 1 license entitlement before this announcement, and going forward, you would multiply that 1 per processor license entitlement by 100 to get the new processor value unit requirement of 100. Another example is if a customer needed to acquire 1 per processor license on an x86 dual-core server that had a total of 2 processor cores in the old structure, they would now need to acquire 50 value units for each processor core to get the total processor value unit license requirement of 100. As you can see, this is the same answer you get if you took the 1 per processor license and multiply it by the conversion factor of 100. By using a conversion factor of 100, we have eliminated fractional licenses and simplified the task of determining the number of licenses required on a server. And just like the previous licensing structure, processor value units for a product are fully transferable among systems. So if you now have the equivalent of 100 value units of DB2 Enterprise Edition on an x86 dual-core system and want to move these to a system Power 5 environment, you can migrate these 100 value units to run on a Power 5 system with 1 processor core. This will help you protect your middleware investments and increase the flexibility you have to evolve your system architecture. Please go to the next page, which is page 9 in this presentation. Just like the conversion of per-processor licenses to processor value unit licenses, we have used a conversion factor of 100. In this case, however, instead of multiplying today's price by 100, we have divided it by 100 to get the new price per value unit. So let me be clear why the customer price does not change as we move to the new licensing structure. The price a customer pays is the product of the number of licenses times the price per license. By multiplying the number of licenses by 100 and at the same time dividing the price by 100, the net effect is no change. You can see this clearly in the table in the bottom half of this slide. We're using WebSphere ND deployed on a RISC dual core server. Originally, the customer acquired two licenses at $15,000 per license for a total of $30,000 U.S. By dividing the price by 100 and multiplying the licenses by 100, the customer will now have 200 processor value units at $150 each for the same total of $30,000. In order to accomplish this, we maintain the existing three tiers that we've already announced. Please turn to page 10. So as you can see, what we've done, with the new processor value unit licensing, IBM has made the structure clearer and simpler to administer for both customers and IBM by avoiding fractional licenses, which we had in our previous environment. we think we have also provided flexibility and granularity for licensing IBM middleware to further enable subcapacity licensing and to deliver software price performance improvements in the future. I want to emphasize one last time, we're not changing middleware prices with the introduction of this structure. Excuse me. The benefits of this structure are not limited to new multi-core chip technologies, but will also position us to address in the future the increasing adoption of new hardware and software technologies. The bottom line is we believe this new structure provides a sustainable licensing foundation for the future. Please move to page 11. Let's also review now what's happening to Password Advantage part numbers. IBM is replacing all of the existing per processor part numbers with new processor value unit part numbers. This is a one-for-one replacement, so we will have the same part number structure and the same number of part numbers after the transition. All new licenses acquired after July 25th will be in processor value units. Software maintenance for existing maintenance entitlements will be converted to processor value units, and the new part numbers will appear at the next maintenance renewal date. There is also a transition period of about 100 days where both the old and the new part numbers are valid. After November 10th, only the new part numbers will be recognized. This will avoid having to reissue existing quotes before the resulting orders can be processed. The transition period applies to all part numbers, including license plus one-year maintenance part numbers and maintenance renewal part numbers. Let's now move to the next page, page 12. In planning for this announcement, we wanted to minimize any rework that might be required. As a result, the per-processor part numbers and any quotes issued before July 25th will still be processed if ordered prior to November 10th. During the transition period, both the existing and the new part numbers will be valid. After November 10th, only the new processor value unit part numbers will be valid. Should any issues arise after November 10th where the old part numbers are needed, they should be brought to the attention of your normal support organization. We strongly recommend that you close all outstanding quotes with your customers by October 31st. Please move to page 13. To implement the processor value unit structure, IBM will replace over 1,300 per processor part numbers going forward with new processor value unit part numbers on a one-for-one basis. The existing part number structure does not change. That is, we will still have part numbers for license plus 12 months of maintenance, maintenance renewal, and maintenance reinstatement, and trade-ups. To establish the new processor value unit prices, I told you we divided the existing price by the conversion factor of 100. In some countries, due to rounding, this may have resulted in some very small price changes of plus or minus 1%. We converted the Password Advantage points in the same fashion. We do not expect this rounding to impact a customer's Password Advantage band level. In addition, for billing and administrative simplicity, we created packs of 10 processor value units as the minimum order quantity for programs where processor value unit prices were very low. For example, when converting the per processor price of $100 U.S. and then dividing by 100, the processor value unit price would have been $1. Which would result in prices under $1 when discounted. Programs where the per-processor license plus first 12 months of maintenance was less than $1,250 U.S. and where maintenance renewal price was less than $250 U.S. are now available in 10 packs. For these products, a quantity of one processor value unit is not available. I spoke to you earlier about the conversion to new part numbers. Let's take a look at this conversion in a little more detail. Please move to page 14. Here is an example of a 10 processor minimum on an order quantity. Prior to July 25th, the maintenance renewal price for IBM Tivoli Security Compliance Manager managed processor was $75.30 and was worth 0.3 PA points. When divided by 100, the maintenance price would have been 75 cents U.S., and the PA points would have been 0.003. This number was too small to be handled effectively in our systems for billing and administrative purposes. For implementation purposes, we created packs of 10 for these low-priced products. Now move on to the next page, page 15. As I said, IBM will replace all per-processor part numbers with processor value unit part numbers going forward. But the existing part number structure remains the same. That is, we will still have part numbers for new license and 12 months of maintenance, part numbers for maintenance renewal, and part numbers for maintenance reinstatement. All new license entitlements will be in processor value units. So any new acquisitions will be in processor value units. Existing license entitlements will remain unchanged using per-processor licenses. For customers planning to use existing entitlements, they simply need to use the conversion factor of 100 to determine the equivalent number of processor value units. All per-processor software maintenance entitlements have been converted to processor maintenance, processor value unit maintenance entitlements as of July 25th. And as you can see, a complete list of all of the new part numbers in the announcement letter on July 25th, dated July 25th. Now let's talk a little bit about Passport Advantage Online. PA Online is the secure website which customers and resellers use to obtain information about Passport Advantage agreements. It is the access point for the processor value unit calculator and the reporting of the active entitlements and maintenance renewal quotes. Other features of PA Online are not changing with this announcement. Please move to page 17. Displayed here is the first screen of the of PA Online, and this is the view that the customer sees. If you look to the right, you will see the at the right navigator bar, you will see circled in red the link to the value unit calculator. The value unit calculator is a standalone web-based tool which allows the user to calculate the number of value units required for each announced processor in the marketplace. This tool can be used for planning purposes and for managing an installed environment. And when I take you through the next presentation, I'm going to take you through this value unit calculator in detail. Let's take a quick look at it, though, and please go to page 18. And I will take you through this in detail in the next presentation, but just so you know, it has two ways to go through the calculator, both the guided mode and the expert mode, depending on your how comfortable you are. And then it will ask you a series of questions to take you to the final number of value units required. If you go to page 19, you can see one result of a selection having been made, and you fill in the middle of the page the number of processor cores on which you're running the software, and as you can see, it will calculate the number of value units required. But I will take you through all of this in much more detail in just a few minutes. If you move on to page 20, you can now look at the let's now look at how the entitlements will have changed in Passport Advantage Online. Once again, here is the Passport Advantage Online opening screen. You notice on the left nav bar the red circle is around the category reporting. The customer will click on this section and rather than the entitlement section, which is simply for the purpose of allocating entitlements. Please move to page 21. If you move to page 21, you'll see the next screen from PA Online, and we're going to click on Active Entitlements. Move to the active. Now I'm on page 22, and from this screen, the customer would select the site he wishes to inspect. He should request all, so it'll show all kinds of entitlements in, that are active in that particular site. And if you now move to page 23, what will come back on the Active Entitlement screen are the new value unit part numbers will be replaced by the per processor part numbers, and the quantities will be updated for value units. Please move to the next page, which is page 24. I'm going to show you where you access the active renewal quotes, which will have been changed to processor value units also. Unfortunately, I've not yet been able to get a detailed screenshot, but when maintenance renewals are starting to be generated right after July 25th of last week, all maintenance part numbers will be converted to processor value unit part numbers using the conversion factor of 100. And if you move to page 25, we think we've provided the customer some sufficient number of tools to manage their environment and with the new processor value unit structure. Now, if you will move to the next presentation that I'm going to go through, which is processor value unit tools, quote tools education. It was one of the three presentations mentioned in the invitation to this session. If you will please turn to page 2. Go over just a little bit of what I'm going to talk about. And what I'm going to do is review in general terms what's changed and what hasn't changed for the quote process as a result of this change from per processor to processor value unit. We'll discuss what tools have been created and where they can be accessed. And after that, we will do a deeper dive and show you how the processor value unit calculator assistance tools work and how they fit into the existing quote process. Then we will walk through several screenshots of the updated quote process for one middleware product, which uses the processor value unit charge metric. Okay, please move to page 3. Just as an overview, the quantity of licenses ordered for a middleware product on a per-processor licensing basis was based on the number of activated processor cores available to the middleware on the server. Beginning in 2005, determining the quantity of licenses required became more complicated as the middleware vendors began to license their multi-core chips, effectively using fractional licensing. This complexity promises to increase as new multi-core chips enter the market in the future. With processor value unit pricing, IBM is taking the fractional licensing out of the equation and has created tools to assist sales reps and business partners in identifying their customer environments and to determine how many processor value unit licenses are required. The quote process is essentially the same as today, except what's changed is that we have created processor value unit calculator assistant tools and inserted links to these calculator tools in the quote tools. The primary thing that's changed is the quantity ordered. Now let's go to page 4 to talk more about calculator assistance tools and where they can be accessed. To facilitate the quote process, we have created links to the processor value unit calculator assistance tools, which can be accessed from the existing IBM software group supported quote tools, including DSW Pricebook and BP eOrder. Only the processor value unit calculator can be accessed as a standalone tool from the Passport Advantage online website. The alternative processor calculator tool cannot be accessed from this standalone, and I will take you through this. We will show specifically how the calculators can be accessed from the DSW price tool, and we will walk through the screenshots later in the presentation. Please move to page 6. The first tool I want to bring to your attention is the processor value unit table, which contains each announced processor and its associated processor value units. This table is available for download from the existing Lotus Notes Priceless database in spreadsheet and CSV formats for use with user-developed tools. The next tool is the processor value unit calculator, which has been created to assist you in identifying the quantity of processor value units required for customer environments. There are actually two calculators to select from, and I'll be taking you through each of them throughout this presentation. Now let's move to page 5, and I'll show you a flowchart of the quote process after inserting the processor value unit assistance tools. I have charts out of order, I now just realized. I'm on page 6 now. Both calculator assistance tools can be accessed from the software group supported quote tools, including DSW Pricebook and from BPE Order. The important advantages of the processor value unit calculator are mainly the drill-down design of the tool and the availability of a guided or expert mode to help you navigate the various processor environments. The key disadvantage of the processor value unit calculator is that you need to manually transfer calculated quantities back to the DSW price book. Conversely, the main advantage of the alternative processor selection calculator is that it returns calculated quantities automatically back to the DSW price book screen from which the quote was initiated. However, the navigation features of the alternative processor selection calculator are limited, and there are only two drill-down selection levels here, making the identification of a unique processor environment more challenging. And we will take you through that and show you how that works. We are recommending that at this time that you get used to what we are calling the processor value unit calculator, the more sophisticated one, because in 2007, this will become the primary value unit calculator to be used, and the alternative processor selection calculator will be obsoleted. Now let's move to page 7. The two processor calculator assistance tools are different. The processor value unit calculator, the preferred one, is more structured and is designed to facilitate identification of a customer's unique processor environment. Conversely, the alternative processor selection calculator is less structured and is organized as a simple listing of servers and associated processors. We will take a look at each of these on the next few pages. Let's begin with a look at what we call the processor value unit calculator on page 8. What I've done here is give you a screenshot of the final screen when you're using the processor value unit calculator. You've made a number of selections to get here. Keep in mind the objective of the calculator assistance tool is to help sales reps and business partners identify the type of processor on which the middleware products are being deployed, and the processor value unit license requirement for each core type. Now let's move to page 9 and discuss this in more detail. So what we've done here is taken the final screen and identify all of the fields. You can look at the column headers from left to right and see that the user has selected x86 architecture, IBM as the server vendor, Blade Center as the server brand, Intel as the processor vendor, and so on. Then the user enters the quantity of processor cores on which the software is deployed. From this point, the user would manually enter the quantity of value units into the DSW price book or other quote tool. Now let's move to page 10 and look at the alternative processor selection calculator and what that structure looks like. This is an image of the last screen in the alternative processor selection calculator experience. The user has made selections and already entered a quantity of processor cores for each processor environment. Let's move to page 11 and look at as we describe that layout in more detail. The fields are essentially the same, it just has a different format. In the alternative processor selection calculator tool, after selecting IBM as the server vendor, the user must find the correct processor environment by scrolling down through, in the case of IBM, 16 server combinations, and then enter a quantity of processor cores for each processor environment. The processor environment descriptions are similar to those used in the previous calculator, but the user experience to identify the correct processor environment is completely different. Also note that the processor environment descriptions are all collected in one column labeled processor type. The challenge for the user is being able to identify the correct processor environment from a large number of selections. The advantage, on the other hand, is that once a processor selection is made, the number of processor cores are entered, the tool will automatically return the value unit quantities back to DSW price book or other quote tool. So with an understanding of the processor value unit assistance tool structures, let's move to page 12 and look at how these new tools fit into the existing quote process. There are actually three different ways to prepare a quote with processor value units. First, beginning with a software group supported tool like the DSW price book, you will be prompted to enter processor value units for middleware products using the processor value unit charge metric. Once prompted, you can use one of the two calculator assistance tools to determine the quantity of value units required and continue with your quote in DSW Pricebook as usual. Second, you can go directly to the processor value in a QuickLook calculator assistance tool from the Password Advantage online website and then use your own user-developed tool. Or third, you can go to the Lotus Notes price database and either view the quantity of processors required for your processor environment, or you can download the processor value unit tool into a spreadsheet or CSV format and use some user-developed quote tool. With this overview in mind, let's move to page 13 to begin a step-by-step walkthrough of the quote process using the existing DSW Pricebook tool. Now, I'm going to go fairly rapidly through the next several charts because they are screenshots which step you through the quote process using the various tools. On page 13, we have an image of the DSW Pricebook quote tool and a middleware product which uses processor value units has been selected. The red circle on the chart highlights the fact that the default quantity is set at one value unit. That is not a valid number for a value unit order. The value units in per processor range to 30 to 100, depending on the processor family. To determine the quantity of value units required for your processor environment, let's first select the processor value unit calculator, which can be accessed by clicking on the hot link at the top right-hand corner in the blue circle. This is the recommended value unit calculator. So you select that link and you go to page 14. From here, the user picks either guided or expert mode for going through the calculator. In guided mode, the user will make selections in response to a series of questions and designed to help them identify their unique processor environment, and then will enter processor quantities. In expert mode, the user will more quickly drill down through a few selections and enter processor quantities. We will go over both modes in the next several pages. Guided mode is for the occasional user or a new user. Expert mode is for those who are very comfortable with what they're doing and do not need to be prompted for every question. So let's go to page 15 and start with guided mode. The first two questions the user needs to answer after selecting guided mode is, on which processor architecture are you deploying your software, and on which server vendor are you deploying your software? In the image on this chart, the user has selected x86, and you can see the choices are x86, RISC, IA64, or Itanium, and other. And then the user is about to select IBM as the server vendor, and server vendors are IBM, Dell, Fujitsu, HP, Sun, and other. After each selection, another question appears, and several choices are revealed. So let's move to page 16. On page 16, the user is now asked on which server brand and on which processor vendor is the software being deployed. In the example above, the user has selected Blade Center and is about to choose AMD as the processor vendor. Again, after each selection, another question appears and several choices are revealed. Which we indicated the choices here for the choices from the selections made on this page. Let's move to page 17. The user is now asked two final questions. First, on which processor brand are you deploying your software? And second, on which processor type are you deploying your software? In the example above, the user has chosen Opteron and is about to choose a single-core processor type. After choosing single-core, the user is brought to page 18 and requested to enter a quantity of processor cores for the environment selected. In this example, I'm on page 18 now, the user enters a processor quantity of 2 and then clicks Submit to calculate total value units. Let's go to page 19. So this is the final screen when after you've selected Submit. It shows this is in guided mode. Here the user has a view of the processor environment they have selected and the number of processor cores entered. From here the user has several options. You can download the summary page, print it, or manually record the selections made, and the associated total value unit quantities. Then the user would manually transfer these quantities into the DSW price book tool or other quote tool and continue. Or if the user is not finished making selections or wants to make changes, there are three possibilities. First, they can enter a new processor core quantity from this screen for this processor environment and then recalculate. Second, they can save what they have and add additional configurations. And third, they can erase and totally again. Now that's the end of guided mode. Let's move to page 20 and we'll begin the walkthrough for expert mode. If the user selects expert mode, they first pick one of three possible selection paths for their environment. This totally depends on what you're comfortable with and what kind of knowledge you have about the customer environment. The user can select processor architecture, server vendor, or processor vendor. Let's pick processor architecture and move to page 21. After you've selected processor architecture, the user is presented with four processor architectures from which to select. The user can expand each of the choices and or click expand to see all the drill down selection tree. In this example, the user has selected x86 processor architecture. Let's move to page 22. After selecting x86, the user is presented with all of the available server vendors whose server brands use x86 architecture. Again, the user can expand each of the choices or click expand to see the remaining drill down selection tree. In this example, the user selects IBM as the server vendor. Please move to page 23. After selecting IBM as the server vendor, in this example, the user selects Blade Center as the server brand, after which the user is presented with a table which contains a limited number of processor selection environments for the Blade Center server brand. In this case, the possible environments include single or dual core processor types from either the Intel Xeon or AMD Opteron processor vendors and brands. Then the user enters the core quantities for the identified processor environment and clicks Submit. Let's move to page 24. The user is now presented with the final step in expert mode, which is identical to the final step we saw before when you were doing guided mode. And it has the same selections to recalculate, download, add additional configurations, or start over. And then they would once again manually enter the quantity in their quote tool. Now that's the end of the expert mode and also concludes the processor value unit calculator, which as we just said is embedded in the price book and is available standalone for use in other tools. Now let's move to page 25. As we said, we have two calculator assistance tools. One is called the alternative processor selection tool, and we've just taken you through what we recommend, the processor value unit tool. Let's go to page 26. Once again, we're showing the quote screen from the DSW price book. As you can see, once again, I'm going to highlight the fact that the default quantity is 1, and that is not valid. You must enter a number between 30 and 100 for a single processor. At this point, to determine the quantity of value units required, let's select the alternative processor selection calculator, which is in the blue circle in the middle of the page. Please then select that and move to page 27. At page 27, the user is presented with a set of processor selections to make. And you can see it's prompted to select IBM, Dell, etc. What we are going to do in this case is select IBM, once again, as the server vendor. Let's move to page 28. Now, this is the page that you are, this is the screen on page 28 you are presented with after you've selected IBM as the vendor, and it lists all IBM possible server configurations. And you can see you have to scroll through this list to find the one that's applicable to your environment. In this case, what we've done is we've selected IBM Blade Center, and we've selected both Intel and dual and single core, and we've entered 2 in each of these quantities. After the user has selected the quantities of processor cores, the user clicks the Save button up there at the top to apply the total processor value units to the line item selected in the DSW price book. After clicking Save in the processor selection pool, you're brought to page 29, and you're brought to this screen, and you can see the user had the number of value units is automatically returned to the processor value unit quantity field. In addition, the user sees in the processor detail screen the selections that he has made. Now let's go to page 30 and wrap up. This brings us to the end of the quote processor value unit quote tools education. In backup, we've included several things. First of all, there's a glossary of terms on page 32 and 33. And a guidance on how to obtain more information on page 34. In addition, for your reference, we've included screenshots from the Lotus Notes Priceless Calculator Assistance Tool Experience, and that's in on pages 36 through 55 in the back of this deck. It's basically the same experience as using the processor value unit quote tool. In summary, there are three ways to access the processor value unit calculator assistance tools. You can connect to either of the two value calculator assistance tools from the DSW price book or our BPE order. You can access standalone processor value unit calculator from PA Online, or you can go to the Lotus Notes database and either view the quantity of processor value units required for your processor environment, or you can download the processor value unit table in spreadsheet or CSV format, and then use any user-developed tools that you might have for quote tools. I'm going to conclude now. We will open this up for questions later, and I'm going to turn the meeting over to my colleague, Carlos Belac, and who will take you through some sales scenarios.
Okay, thank you very much, Sue. So if everyone would open up the chart deck from the website, they're identified as PVU sales scenarios. When you open up to the cover page in the third row there, it should say in bold, processor value unit sales scenarios. And so I'm Carlos Balak, and I'm part of the software group distributed pricing strategy organization. And in this module, we're going to walk through a series of sales scenarios to help you understand how to use processor value units. So let's go to page 2, and I'll take you through what we're going to cover. So I'm going to start by showing you how to read the scenario format that we're using throughout this presentation. Then I'll cover a series of scenarios, starting with some simple ones, and then we'll get more complex as we go. I'll close by taking a short look at subcapacity licensing. We'll look at some subcapacity scenarios, and then I'll describe the enhancements to subcapacity licensing that IBM announced in April of 2006. And I'll also remind you of the special terms and conditions which customers have to meet to use subcapacity licensing. So let's begin by taking a look at the format of the scenario pages on page 3. So each of the following scenarios starts with a description of what the customer wants to accomplish. This description is enclosed in the rectangle at the top of the page. Directly below that rectangle, there's a list of all the changes the customer will undertake to get from the before picture to the after picture in this scenario. Following the list of changes are before and after pictures of the customer systems with the results of the scenario changes on the picture on the right side of each page. So each of these pictures includes a number of sections. First, there's a blue rectangle that tells you the kind of system hardware installed, and we note in that rectangle the server vendor and brand. Then below that, there's a yellow rectangle that tells you the middleware installed. And finally, there's a third rectangle that has white boxes with blue circles in them. The white rectangular boxes represent the hardware chips, and the blue circles represent the processor cores in the server. Now, below these pictures, you can see a table which summarizes the IBM middleware, the number of hardware chips and processor cores, and the number of middleware licenses required on that specific server. At the bottom of each scenario is a summary of the actions the customer must take to keep their middleware in compliance with our terms and conditions. So let's go to page 4 and start with a very simple scenario. So, and they're labeled, in this case, scenario 1, and it shows a customer buying a new system and the resulting licenses required both prior to the announcement on July 25th and following it. So in both cases, both the hardware and the middleware will be new. The system purchased before July 25th is on the left, and the system purchased after the introduction of processor value units is on the right. In this scenario, the customer buys a new System X server with 2 dual-core chips and deploys DB2 on it. As you can see in the table, this situation would require 2 per-processor licenses since it is being purchased before the introduction of processor value units. Remember that a dual-core x86 server only requires 1 license for the 2 cores on the chip, or effectively, half of a license per processor. Since there are 4 processors here, the customer will need 2 DB2 licenses. Now, let's see what the customer would acquire subsequent to July 25th with the introduction of processor value units on the right side of the page. So when you look up an x86 dual-core processor on the processor value unit table that Sue took you through in the prior presentation, you'll see that 50 processor value units are required for each processor core on a server with x86 dual-core processors. Since this server has 4 processor cores, the customer will require 200 processor value units of DB2. You can also see that this is the same number that you could get by taking the number of per-processor licenses on the left side of the chart and multiplying them by the conversion factor of 100 that Sue discussed in the first module. She took you through the customer experience module, that conversion factor of times 100. So let's build on this simple scenario on page 5. We'll talk through scenario 2. So here on scenario 2, it's the same kind of a server that was installed in scenario 1. The server was purchased before July 25th, so it looks exactly like the picture on the left side of scenario 1 we just looked at. What the customer wants to do now is to add WebSphere. This will take place after the July 25th announcement. To accomplish that, the customer will order 200 value units of WebSphere using the same approach we saw on the previous chart. Again, when you look up the x86 dual-core processor on the processor value unit table, you'll see that 50 processor value units are required for each processor core on a server. Since this server has 4 processor cores, the customer will require 200 processor value units of WebSphere. There's no change to the number of DB2 licenses, but I've shown them converted to processor value units on the table on the right, so you can compare them to the new WebSphere licenses. So the only middleware the customer needs to order here is 200 processor value units of WebSphere. All right, so let's go to page 6. In the next 3 charts, we'll take a look at some scenarios where we either upgrade or transfer existing processor value unit licenses to new server environments, and we'll begin on page 7. So here on page 7, scenario 3, let's take a look at a customer who upgrades their hardware and wants to fully populate the server with WebSphere. The original system is a 4 processor system P, also referred to as a 4-way by IBM system P, that the customer upgrades to an 8-way. To accomplish this, the customer will need to acquire enough additional processor value unit licenses of WebSphere to match the additional processors. The system P requires 100 value unit licenses for each processor core. Since the customer has added 4 additional system P processor cores, the customer will need to purchase an additional 400 processor ValueNet licenses of WebSphere for a total of 800 processor ValueNet licenses of WebSphere. So in the next scenario on page 8, we'll see what happens when we look at a similar upgrade to this. However, the customer is using a System P with the quad-core module technology. So here on page 8, scenario 3A, let's take a look at a customer who upgrades their hardware but is using the unique Power 5 quad-core module technology. And this technology has two Power 5 dual-core chips on a single module that plugs into a single socket. So the customer still wants to fully populate this called QCM server, or quad-core module server, with WebSphere. The original system is a four-processor System P with one quad-core module that the customer upgrades to an eight-way, which requires the installation of an additional quad-core module. To accomplish this, the customer will need to acquire enough additional processor ValueNet licenses of WebSphere to match the additional processors. The System P QCM, System P with the quad-core modules, requires 50 ValueNet licenses per processor core. Since the customer has added four additional System P QCM processor cores, the customer will need to purchase an additional 200 processor ValueNet licenses of WebSphere for a total of 400 ValueNet licenses of WebSphere. So the key point on this page is that the System P servers, which have the QCM, they're labeled System P Q-based servers, the processor cores require 50 processor value units, as opposed to almost all of the other System P servers, which require 100 processor value units per core. So let's go to page 9, the next scenario, where we'll see what happens when we move to a different type of server. So in this scenario, scenario 4, we'll introduce our first non-IBM hardware platform. The HP ProLiant system is an x86-based server which can have either single or dual-core chips in it. In this case, the customer has an older system with single-core chips. The customer realizes, though, that with their workload increasing, they need more processing power and have decided to migrate to an IBM System I and provide enough additional power for their expected future growth. To accomplish this, the customer will install the new System I, transfer the existing WebSphere Commerce licenses to the new system, and acquire enough additional processor ValueNet licenses to fully populate the system. Since a single-core x86 system requires 100 processor ValueNets per processor core, as do all single-core processor systems, the customer already has 200 processor ValueNets of WebSphere Commerce. These 200 processor ValueNets are enough for two of the four processors on the System I. Since a total of 400 processor ValueNet licenses are required to be in compliance, the customer needs to acquire an additional 200 processor ValueNets of Commerce. Now let's go to page 10. And now we're going to walk through four scenarios where the customer acquires a new middleware product, beginning on page 11. So here, scenario 5, in this scenario, the customer is adding DB2 to an existing WebSphere system. I also want to introduce another term here, full capacity. Using processor ValueNet licensing, a customer can implement one of two kinds of licenses, full capacity or subcapacity. By the way, these are the same two license types that we have available with per processor licenses as well. I'll cover subcapacity later on in a few scenarios, but now with full capacity licensing on this scenario, the customer must have enough licenses for every processor on the server, regardless of whether the product is actually running on each processor or not. In this full capacity situation, the customer already has a four-way System P running WebSphere. You can see that the customer is fully in compliance with our full capacity licensing terms because they have 400 processor ValueNets of WebSphere, or 100 processor ValueNet licenses for each processor core on the system. They then add DB2 to the same to that same server. Again, since it is a full capacity situation, they must acquire 400 processor value units of DB2. In the next scenario, we'll see the customer install an additional server to complement their existing one. So let's go to page 12. Scenario 6, and in this scenario, the customer's workload is expanding, and they have decided to scale out their deployment by adding another System X server. The new second server is configured exactly like the first one, with both running DB2 using full capacity licenses. As we saw earlier, a dual-core x86 server, such as a System X, requires 50 processor value units for each processor core on the system. So the customer already has 200 processor value units of DB2 for their existing System X and must only acquire an additional 200 processor value units of DB2 for the newly acquired System X. This gives them a total of 400 licenses between the two servers. Let's go to page 13. Here, scenario 7, the customer will add an additional server to accommodate a growth in their WebShare portal workload. But it will be a different type of server. They're starting with a System X server, running 200 processor value units of Portal, since the x86 dual-core processor requires 50 processor value units each. And you can see there they have two chips and four cores, so 200 processor value units is a starting point. The new System P server, also with four processor cores, will require 100 processor value units of Portal for each of its processors. That's a total of 400 additional processor value unit licenses of WebSphere Portal for a total of 600 processor value unit licenses across both systems. So to meet the requirements of full capacity licensing, the customer acquires 400 processor value units of WebSphere Portal. Now let's see what happens when a customer splits a workload across two systems on page 14. So here in scenario 8, the customer starts with an x86 dual-core server running both WebSphere and DB2 in full capacity mode. With a growing workload, they decided to bring a new System P server, but plan to split their middleware so that only one product runs on each server. That is, they will run DB2 on one system and WebSphere on the other. On the original System X, the customer has 200 processor value units of both WebSphere and DB2. You can see in the table there on the left. After installing the new system and migrating DB2 off the original system to the new one, the customer will have the same 200 processor value units of WebSphere on the System X. On the new System P, however, the customer is required to have 100 processor value unit licenses for each processor. So they transfer their original 200 licenses and need to acquire an additional 200 licenses to fully populate the new system with 400 processor value unit licenses. Okay, with that, please go to page 15 and we'll take a look at one scenario where we renew maintenance on an existing system on page 16. So here, scenario 9 is a simple maintenance renewal scenario. There is no charge there is no change to the server itself or the middleware products deployed on it. Please remember that in an earlier module, we told you that all maintenance records will be automatically migrated to the new processor value unit maintenance part numbers on announcement day. That was in the customer experience module. When the current software maintenance expires, the customer will need to renew all 200 processor value unit maintenance licenses of WebSphere and 200 processor value unit maintenance licenses of DB2. This can be done using the new maintenance renewal part numbers for each product. In every maintenance renewal situation, you need to renew all the licenses of the product in question using the new part numbers. Now let's go to page 17. And finally, I want to walk through three subcapacity scenarios and then give you an overview of our recent subcapacity enhancements. And so let's begin those three scenarios on page 18, scenario 10. And in this scenario, introduced subcapacity and subcapacity licenses available for some WebSphere and DB2 products requires the customer to physically partition their hardware on all non-x86 systems and then have the appropriate number of licenses for each processor in that partition. For x86 systems, they are required to run either VMware or Microsoft Virtual Server on it, and instead of using physical partitioning. In addition, the customer is also required to install the no-fee IBM Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software, or its fee equivalent, to monitor all their subcapacity licenses and review and submit a report to IBM quarterly on that usage. I'll give you some more details on this in the next page or two. In this case, the customer already has subcapacity licenses of WebSphere MQ running in a two-processor partition on a System P server that has a total of four processors. Since MQ is running in a two-processor partition, the customer only requires 200 processor value units of MQ and has used the subcapacity part number to acquire them. To handle a growing workload, though, the customer is going to expand their physical partition to include an additional processor core. This will require the customer to purchase an additional 100 processor variants of WebSphere MQ to that partition, also using the subcapacity part number to order the correct version of the product. Let's take a look at a scenario where we convert existing full capacity licenses to subcapacity licenses in the process of fulfilling the customer's request on page 19. Scenario 11. In this scenario, the customer is consolidating two four-processor Sun Spark servers onto a single eight-processor Sun server. Each of the original servers is running one of the two IBM middleware products, WebSphere or DB2. On the new server, the customer will partition the server into two physical partitions and run WebSphere and DB2 in subcapacity mode, each in its own physical partition. To accomplish this, the first step is to install the new Sun server. Then before migrating the licenses over to it, they must be converted from full capacity licenses to subcapacity licenses. The process to change from a full capacity part number to the equivalent subcapacity part number is documented on the Passport Advantage website, available for business partners. Please note that it is important to convert the licenses when they are still on the original server, as the customer must be in compliance with their full capacity terms prior to the conversion. If they were to migrate the licenses to the new server first, they would have to have a total of 800 processor value units to be in compliance before they could convert and deploy the 400 licenses actually needed. So you want to convert the licenses while they're still on the original server is the point there. Once the licenses are converted on the old servers, the customer can then migrate them to the appropriate partition on the new server. Since they converted the licenses prior to the migration and are running on the same number of processors after the migration as before, the customer does not need to purchase any additional licenses. Now let's see what happens when they consolidate to a more powerful server that has fewer processors in total on page 20. So here in scenario 12, the customer is consolidating from two competitive servers onto a single, more powerful System P server. WebSphere runs on one of the older systems while DB2 runs on the other. Since the customer wants to optimize both their system performance and their software cost, they are going to physically partition the new System P into two partitions, each with three processor cores assigned to it. Just as in the last scenario, this will require the customer to convert the existing full-capacity WebSphere and DB2 licenses to subcapacity part numbers prior to the migration to the new system. Once converted, they can migrate the licenses to the new System P. However, since the new, more powerful System P can run the workloads on fewer processor cores, the customer migrates 300 of the 400 processor variants they have of each product to the new system. The remaining 100 processor variants of both WebSphere and DB2 become available for redeployment elsewhere. Now let's go to page 21 and take a brief look at the recent enhancements to subcapacity licensing. With subcapacity licensing, the customer does not need to have the number of middleware licenses for each processor on the server. They only need to have enough licenses for the processors assigned to the hardware partition in which the middleware product will run. Except that subcapacity licenses now come in processor value units, all other aspects of the current subcapacity licensing process remains unchanged. Since I realize that some of you aren't as familiar with this process as you would like to be, I'll take a moment to talk about the key points in the process and, where appropriate, how they are impacted by this announcement. The key difference between subcapacity and full capacity licenses is that the customer is required to install and run the IBM Tivoli Alliance Compliance Manager, ITLCM is the acronym, which has a no-fee version for use with IBM middleware as a compliance tool when using a subcapacity license. This tool tracks the use of a subcapacity product to identify the high watermark for the number of licenses used each quarter. Quarterly, the customer is required to produce a standard report showing these high watermarks, and after reviewing it, submit it to IBM electronically, where IBM then validates that the customer has enough licenses for this product. Currently, the ITLCM tool only reports in processor licenses, per processor licenses, and won't recognize processor value units until the first half of next year. Until then, the customer can determine the equivalent number of licenses by using the conversion factor of 100 that Sue described in the customer experience module earlier in this session. Additionally, IBM License Management Server website, which receives the customer's quarterly usage reports, will reflect the number of processor value units after July 25th with our announcement. Now let's spend a few more minutes reviewing the recent enhancements to our subcapacity licensing on page 22. In April of 2005, we announced subcapacity licensing for selected WebSphere and DB2 offerings that run on Unix, i5OS, or OS 400, or Linux when running in partitions created on supported IBM and non-IBM processor systems. And in April 2006, we added x86 systems using either VMware or Microsoft Virtual Server instead of physical partitioning. In addition, we also provided support for Solaris version 10 environments. The current list of IBM middleware offerings which are eligible to use subcapacity licensing and the list of supported partitioning technologies can be found on Passport Advantage. This site will always have the most current list of both subcapacity eligible offerings and supported partitioning technologies. To make it easier for customers to track subcapacity compliance, we also announced the IBM Tivoli License Compliance Manager for IBM software, which is a no-charge version of ITLCM. This version is fully compatible with the existing for-fee version of ITLCM, but can only be used to track IBM software offerings. Customers who want to track non-IBM software can substitute the for-fee version in the compliance process. Any customer who elects to use subcapacity licenses will need to generate and submit to IBM a report on their subcapacity usage quarterly, as we discussed on the prior page. For those of you who want more information on this April's announcements, please refer to the next page. But at this time, I would like to conclude this presentation and open up the call, if you would, Joyce, please, for questions. Thank you very much.
At this time, if anyone has a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone and record your name. If someone answers that question, you may press star 2 to withdraw. Again, for questions, star 1 on your touch-tone phone. One moment until the first question comes in. Your line is open, sir.
Hello. I have a question about how I determine whether I've got a single or dual core processor. I think a lot of users would want to be able to say, I've got a System i520 one way. Is that dual core, single core, whatever? Is there any way I can go look that up rather than have to know from the tools I've seen today, you have to know whether you've got single or dual core?
Right. It's really up to the customer, to advise whether they have single or dual core and how many processor cores are on each server. Now with that, the approach we would recommend would be to, you know, ask the customer to fill out a spreadsheet for each server they have and indicate the number of chips and number of cores that they have. Now, in lieu of that, the approach that we would recommend is that the requirement is 100 processor value units per core across all hardware environments, except for four processors. If you go out to the website and take a look at the processor value unit table, you can see include x86 based systems. And those systems, are certainly, very high volume systems, and three big, server vendors would include IBM System X, Dell, and HP ProLiant. The second exception is the P-Series QCM or Q-based servers that I discussed or described earlier in this sales scenario module. The third exception is the Sun T1 Octi-Core chips, and the fourth exception is the IBM System P Blade Center JS21 servers. So there's four exceptions to the 100 processor value unit requirement. And those exceptions the processor families are identified in the processor value unit table on the business partner website that Mike Ryan referred to earlier. Now, one of the challenges for not just IBM but other middleware vendors who have reduced licensing requirements from 100 to something less than 100. For certain processors, including, for example, the x86 dual-core processors, is that the server model numbers that, let's say, Dell, HP ProLiant, or IBM System X, refers to in their selling documentation does not necessarily indicate the number of whether it's a dual-core chip or a single-core chip. So it's really up to the customer who acquired that system to be able to identify that. If the customer doesn't know, then I mean, there's certainly incentive to know, right? Because the license entitlement requirements are less for x86 dual core processor cores than they are for most of the other servers out there.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm a technically qualified system architect, and I couldn't tell you which ones are single core and which are dual core. I thought they were all dual core, but your tool says here's a place to type in if it's a single core. So, I mean, if I don't know, the customer is not going to know. If I ask him, he says, I've got a two-way. I say, is that single or dual core? Don't know. I mean,
right.
How do I sell your software if he doesn't know and I don't know,
It's important to recognize that there are very few, right, four exceptions today to the general requirement of 100 processor values per core.
I understand that bit. To me, that's a different point.
Right.
The question about how many points per core is not answered if the customer doesn't know whether he's got single core or dual core. Right? If I say to him, how big's the machine? He says, it's a two-way, it's a four-way.
Right.
And I say, is that a single core two-way or a dual core two-way? I don't know. So the number would change, my understanding.
Absolutely.
Have I got four cores in my two-way or,
And you're on an excellent point here, a very important point, because, as we described, Sue touched upon it on the customer experience module, but in other previous modules that hopefully you had a chance to participate in, there is no general agreement today in the marketplace on what an N-way means, right? Some vendors, like Sun, like all of the x86 vendors, those who sell x86 systems, HP ProLiant, Dell PowerEdge, IBM System X, when they talk about N-ways, they're talking about how many chips they have on their system. But other hardware vendors, including HP PA RISC servers, IBM System P, IBM System I, they're talking about, when they say N-way, they're talking about number of processor cores. Right. So there is this complexity in the marketplace today because the hardware technology has changed and the marketplace is adjusting to this change. But in the meantime, we do have to be cognizant, and have to ask the question, when you say N-way, what do you mean? Do you mean the number of chips or the number of cores? It is a real question. And it's not just a challenge for IBM middleware licensing. You get it's the same challenge for many of our competitors in the middleware space.
Maybe we could produce a list for the IBM products then. so that I could go somewhere to look up a model, system I, system P, whatever, and it would tell me whether it's a dual-core machine. You know, I type in the model number and it would say the number of cores. Maybe we could at least fix it for the IBM hardware.
We can, and we are, in some select education sessions, and if a question like this comes into, we have a project office in place, comes into the project office. So if you were to ask this question of your normal support organization, whether it's a sales rep or a business partner rep, they will have access to a project office. And as this becomes gets more traction, right, gets more familiar to people, they'll know the answers immediately. But we do have a project office, and in that project office, we are setting up that type of template that you're talking about, where if you type in you tell me the server model number, I can give you, here's a cheat sheet on how many how many chips or cores, whether it's a single core chip or a dual core chip.
Sorry.
However, that is not. It's not an easy situation for x86 servers, right? Because, as I described, an x86 server, even if you have the model number, doesn't tell you whether the customer chose a dual-core chip or single-core chip, because you could have either or on the same exact server model number. So it's a little more complicated for some of the systems, but we can do a cheat sheet, and we are doing a cheat sheet for most of the systems.
That's great. That would be good. Thank you for that.
I appreciate the question. Very good question. Thank you.
Our next one is coming from Michelle Heist.
Yes, hello. In the few last slides, you spoke of transfers and migrations and whatnot. I'm assuming that would just be purchases that they're moving to bigger machines. But if they're just transferring from one machine to another where they're going to still use the same value units, is that required for us to notify IBM?
No, it's not required. The only requirement, just like today, where customers are required, to have the correct, number of per processor license entitlements. Tomorrow they need to have the correct number of processor value unit license entitlements. So, if they wanted to be in compliance, they just need to make sure they have the right number of processor value unit licenses. There's no requirement to notify us that you moved systems.
Okay.
If there's no change in number of per processor value units required for the new system.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Our next one is coming from Lewis Handworker. Your line is open, sir.
Yes. I had a question about scenario number 12, where you are consolidating servers of different types to subcapacity, and you've moved from 800 total value units to 600 for both the Webster and the DB2. If indeed there is no there's no hardware to deploy these extra 200 value units, at time of maintenance renewal, does the renewal now reduce to a total of 600 processor value units?
Well, if they have no other servers that they can redeploy these licenses to, or that they intend to redeploy to. They're certainly not required to renew the maintenance for those two processor cores. But I would point out, if they're planning to acquire additional servers and IBM middleware on those servers, over the next 2 years or so, it's to their advantage to keep that maintenance current and avoid having to reinstate the license entitlements.
I see. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and our next question is coming from Pam. Your line is open, Pam.
Yes, as it relates to the maintenance renewals that will be coming out, and you talk about the conversion of going from processors to the value units, is IBM going to take it upon contacting the customer to find out what type of processor, whether it's single, dual core, RISC, x86, that's something the partner has to do? How is that going to be handled?
Thanks for that question, Pam. As we have today, we have it's really the responsibility of the customer to make sure that they're in compliance with the license entitlement requirements. So in the conversion from or migration from processor licenses to processor value unit licenses, as Sue pointed out in that customer experience module, we're going to use this factor of 100. To migrate or convert all of the maintenance, both purchased and renewed maintenance entitlements to processor values. And at that time, providing that they were in compliance prior to the conversion, you know, prior to July 25th, they will be in compliance after the conversion. So we're not going to, you know, we're just going to simply apply that, and we've already done so, to the customer's entitlement records, the maintenance accounts, that is. We're simply going to apply that 100 conversion factor, you know, they'll be in compliance at that time. Does that answer the question, Pam?
Well, I guess what happens if they're running this on dual core versus single core, and you should use the, 0.5 versus the 100? How are you going to assume that that's what they're running?
Well, actually, you know, we announced in April of 2005 that the entitlement requirement for x86 dual core chips is one entitlement for the two processor cores on each chip. So, you know, we're going on the presumption that they acquired one license for each chip, if you will, each dual core chip, or each, you know, for two cores on the chip, half a license per core. So if we apply that conversion factor of times 100 to half of a license per core, you know, you get 50 processor value units per core for each core on an x86 dual core chip, and that's the requirement. So they should be in compliance.
This is Sue. If I could jump in here.
Sue, thank you.
We are assuming everybody is correctly licensed today, and therefore the 100, the multiplying times 100 would make them accurate. And as we go out over time, as the renewals are processed in the future, a customer should, as we today, go through asking them if they're in compliance today with our licensing practices. We'll be doing that in the future. Now, I don't know how you as a business partner interact with our renewals process. Do you want, are you the customer-facing person on that? And if so, you should ask them, you know, what is it they require to renew. If our renewal teams are doing it, they will ask that question as we go out over time.
Okay.
But today, if they're in compliance today, and for the first, you know, for the next 6 to 9 months, there should be absolutely no problem. And we're making the presumption that everybody's in compliance, and when they say they're renewing one license, whether it's running on a RISC dual-core processor or running over two x86 dual-cores, they are in compliance. Any other questions?
Okay.
Does that help anyway?
We have another one. Kelly Meehan, your line is open.
Hello. My question is it may have been answered in previous presentations, so I apologize, but my concern is this, that as a regional system integrator, the majority of opportunities and engagements that we're working on are for customers that are acquiring a new solution that is going to be based on IBM middleware, WebSphere, DB2, et cetera, and they don't have or don't want to utilize existing hardware infrastructure. And oftentimes these customers, because of budget allocation, time frames, et cetera, need to purchase a software solution first, then acquire the hardware, and then go through and actually implement the solution. So oftentimes when we sell IBM software to the customer, they don't yet know or haven't made the decision the hardware platform on which they want to run the middleware. Typically it's, well, we think it's going to be P, but it might be X, but we still have to figure that out, but we need to buy the software now, and moving forward we'll figure out the hardware, et cetera. So my question is this, how are we supposed to sell the IBM software to customers in these scenarios when we know that they're not going to be able to tell us what hardware platform the software is going to run on? And in the past, all we needed to know based on sizing and capacity details that were determined, we knew how many processors it was going to need to run on, so that's how they purchased the software, but now it's got to be processor value units.
The thing to recognize, right, is that the hardware technology, you know, change, right, the strategy, you know, that we described the x86 vendors are using going forward to deliver performance, you know, improvements for their chips is different than the historical strategy of improving each of the core performance of each core, right? And the result of that changing technology is a change in licensing for x86 dual core chips, not just from IBM, but from some of our major, you know, competitors in the marketplace. So if the customer really doesn't know the platform, if you know, I would expect that you know in some cases a customer you know has an affinity to a certain platform, and the likelihood is they're going to stay with that platform. But if they don't know, then the you know what I would describe, you either need to give them two quotes, right, and say, you know, here's a quote assuming 100 processor variants per processor core. You know, this is the sort of the high water mark. If you should be using x86 dual core processors, it's 50 processor variants per core. Here's what that would look like. So clearly, it's in the interest of the customer to indicate at the time of the order, you know, what hardware environment they're going to be deploying on. If they absolutely can't, then I think the answer is 100 processor variants per core. You know, and let's just make sure that in competitive bid situations, you know, the middleware vendor competitors have the same information.
This is Sue again. In addition, I would think as we go out over time, the planning per processor as that you would have done in the past was going to become more difficult anyway because of the differing, what we see as the future of the performance of these processor cores. And so a processor is not going to be a processor. And so I think if you were doing in the future and you knew you needed, I'm making something up right now, you needed 16 processor cores of a RISC environment, you might have needed 32 processor cores of a x86 environment to run the same workload. And so I understand the not knowing exactly what you're going to be running on, but if you were doing the kind of capacity planning that I would think you would have to do to run that solution, you should be able to come fairly close to what it is you need to order. When we have x86 quad cores coming out, and you know Sun has this T1, and there are people who believe by something like 2010, 16 core chips are going to be standard in the marketplace. This is a problem we all have to face, every single one of us in this business, customers, business partners, system integrators, hardware vendors, software vendors. Have to face this complexity, and so we just need to start trying to do a little better job of capacity or performance planning.
But I would just add one more comment, which is to say, as Sue points out, it's going to get more difficult, more challenging as new multi-core chips, you know, 8-core chips, 16-core chips, on 16-core chips come out to the marketplace. You know, and that's why we're announcing now, while it's still relatively simple, right? I encourage everyone to go out to the website, take a look at the processor value unit table, the one that's color-coded, it has green, yellow, gray, and it's basically three tiers, right? 100 processor value units, 50, and 30. And you can see there, if you look at the table closely, that there are only four exceptions, four processor families that are something other than 100 processor value units per core. And I just encourage you all to get familiar with that before it gets more complicated in the future.
Okay, thank you. And I guess the only follow-on I have to that, it's a bit of a different topic, but as we've been going through the charts, I was trying to access the calculator tool online, and I clicked on the Passport Advantage Online for business partners to try to get to the tool, assuming that there was a tool version for business partners, and it's asking me for customer site information. That's a problem.
Let me check into that. That doesn't sound right. Let me check into that.
Okay, because I can't seem to get into the calculator without providing
that. We'll check into that. So you went into PA Online for business partners?
Yep.
Okay.
And you clicked on the words value unit calculator, that link?
Yes.
We'll check into that right away.
Okay.
Would you send maybe Mike Ryan or Mom, send a note to me, and we'll get back to you. I'm msue@us.ibm.com, msue@us.ibm.com.
Thank you. Thank you. Then our next question is coming from Holly Short.
Hi, my apologies if I've missed this, but is there any way we can get a copy of the communications that went to all of our customers, generic or whatever went to them to explain the new processor value unit so that we can be talking more on an apples-to-apples communication path?
Yeah. So isn't that customer letter included on the business partner website?
I'm actually checking right now.
This is Mike. I can answer. And yes, it is.
Yes.
And so the announcement letter is out there as well as the maintenance letters.
Okay.
I believe there are 25 different translations which will be made available out there. So for the Business Partners International. Yes, so that is all available from that business partner, the processor value unit for business partner website. And if you have access to that, if you don't, then I can forward that to you.
Well, if you, Holly, would go to back to that Quote Tools education deck that Sue talks with, the second one,
right.
And you go to page 34, you'll see a link right there. If you just put that in PowerPoint presentation mode and click on PA for resellers, you'll go right to the website.
Super. Thank you.
Yes, and this is Mike, and I'm sorry I did not get the name, but someone had asked a question about the value unit calculator. Again, from the July 27th, the kickoff call, and actually in today's call as well, in the first presentation that Sue spoke to, the customer value, and I'll get the exact slide for you. That would have been slide 4. There is a link to the processor value unit calculator, and I tested that when the question arose, and that does take you to that particular website. You would need, though, to, of course, have an IBM ID and password would be required for that. But that is working, and I did confirm as we were working through this. If there's any other questions, please follow up, either ask another question or send me an email to meryan@us.ibm.com. Okay, sorry about that. Joyce, any other questions?
For any final questions, please press star 1. For final questions, star 1. One moment, sir. Showing no final questions, sir.
All right. Well, I would like to thank Sue and Carlos for presenting, and I'd like to thank you, our IBM business partners, for joining today's call. I encourage you to visit the Processor Value Unit Resources for IBM Business Partners website to review all the sales enablement materials being made available to build your sales skills. If you have additional questions, I encourage you to contact your IBM software distributor or your IBM software sales business partner representative or contact the IBM tech line. All have been trained on the IBM Processor Value Unit licensing and to better assist you and meet your needs. If that's not working for you, please send me an email to meryan@us.ibm.com. This concludes today's Processor Value Unit Sales Skills Training Conference Call. Thank you.